Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views. And, of course, for the next hour, hopefully, they're going to be the views of Pastor Billy Crone as we continue our dissertation on the final countdown. Now, if you look at what's going on in the world today, so much of it doesn't make sense. I mean, how could America, the most powerful nation in the world, suddenly be facing financial Armageddon? Why are we seeing so many of the things going on in the Middle East today? I did an interview with a Jewish gentleman, one of our favorite regular guests, Barry Shamish, and he was talking about how totally illogical it would be for Israel to go to war with Iran. It just wouldn't make sense. It couldn't happen because it's illogical. And as I pointed out to him, Barry, you don't understand. What you say is absolutely right. It would be totally suicidal, illogical for Israel ever to think about going to war with Iran. But you're not dealing with logic today. There are other forces at work. And if you understand that the things are not logical, but they're occurring anyway, then you can begin to understand better what's going on in the world. And we only have to go back and look at World War I. It was totally illogical for America to have gone into World War I. In fact, the whole war didn't make any sense. But we got into that war, and certainly 21 million people died and twice as many injured, and it simply bankrupted the countries of Europe and destroyed European civilization and really began the world revolution that continues. And then World War II came along, and it's illogical to think American corporations working in Germany built all the weapons that were used by the Germans to kill American boys when we got into the war. But that's exactly what happened. And there's so many things going on today that don't make any sense unless you've read the script. And that's why Pastor Billy Crone's with us today to take us into the final countdown. Pastor Billy, thanks so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Dr. Monteith. It's a pleasure to be on.
All right, you go right ahead. Pick up the story.
Well, you know, tonight we're once again on the issue of the one world religion sign. And, of course, the final countdown is with, a countdown 10 all the way to 1. So we just picked 10. It's not complete as far as there's more. But we picked 10 of the most obvious ones. Signs to indicate that we are fast approaching the last days. And the reason why is because, you know, if people and rightly would say, you know, hey, if there is a God and we really are heading for the end of days and there's a horrible time of tribulation that Jesus himself said is going to be the worst time in mankind's history, never to be repeated again, you'd think if he's loving, he'd let us know. Well, he has. It's in the Bible. The problem is we're living in such a spiritual famine today. And of all times for people to not crack open the Bible and find out what's going to happen and be prepared, but if there's a famine in churches today, one thing that churches just continually do not seem to want to touch with a 10-foot pole is Bible prophecy, and I don't think that's by chance. I think that's a spiritual issue because the Scripture is clear. Christians should be able to, with a ministry of love and concern, warn people of what is to come. And that's only a logical response. I mean, if a boat was going down and you knew it and you had the inside scoop that it didn't matter what's going to happen, in 4 hours this boat's going down. It doesn't look like it necessarily right now, but I'm telling you, it's flooding below. We need to get off this boat. Now, what do you do? I mean, what's your modus of operandis? Do you just casually say, well, I don't want to tell somebody, that might offend them, or they're going to call me an alarmist? You know, what do you do? You do whatever you can to at least give people a fighting chance. And that's what we did with the final countdown, is to try to show people that, yes, this is not just another Christians acting weird, saying it's the end of days. Hey, guess what? It really is happening this time around. And you
hold that thought. All right, Pastor Billy, go right ahead, and I agree with you. It's coming around. The ship is sinking. The holds are filling with water, and you and I are out there on the front lines trying to tell people, you better start getting into those lifeboats, you know. Come up off the dance floor. There's no more time, you know, for sitting around drinking and carousing and having a good time. We're in an emergency situation, and somebody's got to take the leadership. And, of course, the one thing we can do is point people towards the Lord. But you pick up the story.
Yeah, you know, and again, that's what we're trying to do with the final countdown. Again, if you care about somebody, you care about them enough to tell them the truth, even if they don't want to hear it and if it's uncomfortable, because you could see the danger that lies ahead. And so that's what we did with 10 different signs that the Bible clearly says we're in the last days. You need to wake up and get ready. And we've already covered with the Jewish people as a sign, the modern technology, worldwide upheaval, the rise of falsehood with the false Christ and false teachers, the rise of wickedness, the rise of apostasy, especially the church was the issue there. And then again, this is the second time we're on the one world religion, and partly because there's just so much going on this topic, it's just a lot to cover. So tonight, what I'd like to do is the third premise, because last time where we left off, was we saw Revelation 13 says that clearly that there's going to be worldwide worship of the Antichrist. And I think a lot of people, even in, you know, people want to get labeled into the conspiracy crowd, it's not a conspiracy. There is an agenda is really what's going on. But oftentimes people will focus on the one world economy issue and the one world government issue, and rightly so. But the need to understand the heart of this Antichrist system is satanic. And being satanic, Satan has always wanted to be worshipped, and that's why he fell from heaven, is because he wanted to be God. He always wants to be worshipped instead of God. And so that's why he got kicked out, and so because God alone will be worshipped. And so the Antichrist is going to be, if you will, Satan incarnate on the earth, Satan in the flesh. Okay, and so at the heart of Satan is worship, so is going to be this Antichrist. And that's exactly what we see. It's not just he's on a power trip to get the whole government under control and the whole earth. It's not just he's going to have total monetary control to, you know, squeeze people, if you will. It's about worship. And so that's why it's very important to understand that heart, because we're seeing the world being prepared to come under one religion. The Bible says once that happens, the Antichrist will declare the ultimate new religion that he is to be worshipped. That happens 3.5 years into the tribulation. He goes into the Jewish temple, declares himself to be God, and which, by the way, the Jewish people are preparing to build.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan and Pastor Crone simply talking about this whole idea of we're going to have a one world religion. And, you know, certainly if you listen to Oprah Winfrey, she will tell you there are many paths to God. I mean, certainly Christianity is not the only path to God, and there are lots of paths to God. And that, of course, is the devil's lie. George W. Bush, shortly before he left the White House after having hoodwinked the Christians of this country for a number of years, made the statement, well, we all worship the same religion. I mean, we worship the same religion the Muslims do. I mean, all religions have good in them, you know, and certainly Christianity is not an exclusive religion. The Bible has a lot of great stories in it, but certainly no mention of the fact that the Bible is the inspired word of God. The man who led the Christians in this country for 8 years during his pregnancy, got them to back him when he was engaging in torture of many times innocent people who had nothing to admit. And think of their screams as they were tortured under the auspices of the military, carrying out the orders. If you ever read General Taguba's report, we have it, Major General Taguba's report. He was told if he told the truth about Abu Ghraib, he would lose his military career. He told the truth. He was ordered to resign. That is the way the military works today, though it's the way the government works. You never tell the truth. You always cover for those above you. Well, basically today we are moving towards a one world religion. You pick up the story there, Pastor.
Well, and yeah, and we get that based out of the text, clearly out of Revelation 13. And let me read to you that text. It says the whole world. Okay, it's not a section of the world. It's not just one country or a couple or a region. It's the whole world was astonished and followed the beast. That's the Antichrist. Men worshiped the dragon. That's Satan, defined by the text, because he had given authority to the beast of the Antichrist, and they also worshipped the beast, okay, and asked, who is like the beast? Who can make war against him? All inhabitants of the earth will worship the beast, the Antichrist, all whose names have not been written in the book of life belonging to the Lamb, Jesus Christ, that was slain from the creation of the world. So the Bible clearly says that there really is coming a day when all the inhabitants of the earth are going to be busy worshiping the Antichrist himself. And again, as I said later, or earlier in other passages, Paul says that he is going to declare himself to be God, and he's going to demand worship, much akin to the Roman Caesars did long ago, except this guy is not going to pull it off just in the Roman world. He's going to do it in the whole world. Okay, that's what's different about this time. And so that's the logical question. Well, wait a second. Christian, you're saying I need to get prepared. We're living in the last days. Do what makes this time any different? Do I really see any sign that the whole world, not just a region, but the whole world is being deceived into creating a one-world religion? Slightly. And that's what we're seeing with the what's called the interfaithism movement, okay, is what's coming down the pike. Now, we saw last time what has laid the foundation for that is, first of all, they've gotten rid of any sense of right and wrong with this relativistic belief, whatever you believe is true to me, whatever I believe is true to you, which is baloney. It's illogical, not just unbiblical. It's illogical. The moment you say there are no absolutes, you just made an absolute statement. Then what they're doing is you have to get rid of those who won't go along with the wrong and the rise of worldwide Christian persecution. Now, you had mentioned earlier with the former President Bush, I'm going to read that quote, Lord willing, here in a little bit, and it was his first administration, and he came under the auspices of being a born-again Christian. And after a while, the behavior didn't begin to stack up. You know, multitude of things been going on that would deny Christianity, to put it mildly. And then, of course, towards the end of his administration, it gets more and more blunt. A person had said, you know, hey, that's too bad. I says, that's not too bad. I says, you need to think down the road. I said, because the church is snoozing at the wheel, and if the church was smart, and this was a couple years into the administration, I proposed that if the American church was smart, they need to immediately distance themselves from this gentleman and redefine what it means to be a born-again Christian. I says, because what is happening is because the church is being silent. I says, the church is heaping up upon itself absolute worldwide hatred. Because this gentleman had proposed to be a Christian, and because of the obvious atrocities that were done, the world is not just didn't like former President Bush. He went around saying he was a Christian, and so they put two and two together and says, we really can't stand Christianity. That's the price the church has paid, in my opinion, for being silent. But what's happened is with this interfaithism movement is the basic premise is that, you know, hey, there's no one religion is superior over the other, and don't you dare say anything different. You know, that's what we saw last time with being, quote, intolerant. And what they would have you and I believe is that all religions are valid pathways to God. And that because of that, there's no need to argue, no need to fight. We just need to respect each other. We need to tolerate each other. We need to find common ground with one another. And after all, we need to work together in order to save the earth and keep humanity from destroying herself. Okay? Once again, it sounds wonderful. It sounds nice. Okay? But as far as the Bible's concerned, there is no such thing as an interfaith Christian. That's an oxymoron, like saying something's icy hot. Excuse me? Okay, besides, by their own definition of this interfaith movement, that no one religion is superior than another, they just called Jesus Christ the most intolerant person who ever lived. More than that, they basically called him a liar. Because Jesus himself said in John 14:6, he said, I am the way, not a way. He says, and the truth, not a truth, and the life, not one of the many lives you could choose. And in case you don't get that, he follows it up with this statement. He says, no one comes to the Father except through me. So you can't get any more exclusive than that. I'm not making that up. Read it yourself. Look it up. John 14:6. Jesus said it. So that's oil and water. It cannot mix. You cannot make a statement and say all religions are pathways to God when Jesus himself, even if you want to say Christianity is a religion, Jesus himself said, I'm the only way. How do you reconcile that? Well, you don't. Okay? And again, that's why you're seeing the rise of persecution. With relativism, you try to explain it away. And but people think, well, hey, come on, this is ludicrous. There's no way that these people with this interfaith movement is going to ever pull this off. And what people need to realize, it's not only going to be pulled off because the Bible predicted it 2,000 years ago, but it's already well on its way. In fact, let me just give you just a creed that kind of like a little timeline of order events, you know, recent events, showing you that religions are coming together. Okay, there is a definite plan. It's not a conspiracy. It's a plan. It's an agenda. And it's been put into place about 100 years ago. 1893, we saw for the first time in man's history, this isn't a local effort, this is a global effort, just like the Bible said. The first world parliament of religions were held. Okay? 1930, we saw the World Congress of Faiths. 1948, of course, we saw the birth of the World Council of Churches. 1970, the World Conference of Religions for Peace. 1974, you had the Second World Conference. 1979, the Third World Conference. 1984, the Fourth World Conference. Now, you had a big watershed event that took place when it comes to this Bible prophecy being fulfilled of a one-world religion in 1986. In 1986, the Vatican called for a meeting of all religions to come and pray for world peace. Let me read to you an eyewitness account of that event. Now, as I read this, you need to understand, on the Final Countdown study, we show you the actual video clip of this taking place, because it, and amongst other things that I'm going to quote here in a little bit, we went out of our way to get you the actual video clips, because what we're about to share, it just sounds so absolutely unbelievable. And that's why we want you to see it with your own eyes. We're not making this up. We're not just printing this out at joewackyguyconspiracy.org. Okay, you're going to see the video with your own eyes. You make up your own intelligent decision. But here's what an eyewitness said. He said, specifically the Vatican and the Roman Catholic Church's Pope is currently leading the greatest ecumenical movement in history in order to unite all religions under Rome's leadership. In 1986, Pope John Paul II gathered in Assisi, Italy, the leaders of the world's major religions to pray for peace. There were snake worshippers, fire worshippers, spiritists, animists, Buddhists, Muslims, Hindus, North American witch doctors. He said, I watched in astonishment as they walked to the microphone to pray. The Pope said they were all praying to the same God and that their prayers were creating a spiritual energy that would bring about a new climate for peace. John Paul II allowed his good friend the Dalai Lama to put the Buddha on the altar in St. Peter's Church in Assisi and with his monks have a Buddhist worship ceremony there while Shintoists chanted and rang their bells outside. The prophesied world religion is in the process of being formed before our very eyes. And that was back in 1986. In 1989, you had the Fifth World Conference of Religions of Peace. In 1993, you had the Second World Parliament of Religions, the 100-year anniversary. Then in 1993, they also came out with what was called the Declaration of Global Ethic. And that's, if you will, kind of a slap in the face to the Ten Commandments, much akin with what there's this thing traipsing around called the Earth Charter, but it's basically a new set of commandments for the world to follow. 1994, you had the Sixth World Conference for Religions of Peace. 1997, you had a charter written for the United Religions Organization. Now, what in the world does that sound like? Hello, that sounds like they're working for uniting the religions on the planet. I kid you not, please, I beg you, check it out for yourself. We're not making this up. Go to URI.org. That's the United Religions Initiative Planet. And there you will see a gentleman who's claiming to be a Christian. He had, if you will, a vision of uniting all the world's religions. Let me read to you their own statement on their own website of the reasons why they created the United Religions Initiative. It says this: the seed of URI was planted in 1993 when the United Nations invited William Swing, Episcopal Bishop of California, to host an interfaith service in San Francisco. And that night, he found it hard to sleep, and he told himself, if the nations of the world are working together for peace through the UN, then where are the religions of this world? And so that's what he used for inspiration. Hey, if they're uniting all the governments, we need to unite the religions as well. And that's the birth of this foundation.
And, of course, this thing is going on. There is a real organized effort. to create a one world religion. We will all worship the same God. Well, of course, we can't worship the same God because there are different gods. There is, of course, the Christian God, and then there is another God out there, but we'll talk more about that. Well, Pastor, you go right ahead.
Well, yeah, let me finish with what the URI website has stated. He said, from this inspiration, a vision took shape to create an organization whereby people of diverse faith.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a 4-tape or a 4-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that'll protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Verki water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Verki water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside-down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com.
And just pray together to the common God. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is totally apostasy. If you believe in Christianity, you have to believe there's one way one way to God, and certainly the God we worship. But one of the most important things that is never talked about in the churches is that there are millions of people right here in America who talk about a belief in God, but they're talking about a different God. They talk about a belief in Christ, but they're talking about a different Christ. And until people begin to understand the Gnostic religions, its influence on everything going on, so much of what's going on today just doesn't make any sense. But if it doesn't make any sense, there is another explanation, and that's what Pastor Billy's talking about. So you go right ahead.
Well, you know, that's a really good point, too. And one thing I'd like to back up a little bit on is this whole premise, again, that all religions basically are the same and lead the same path is not only offensive if you're a Christian, but even, frankly, Dr. Monteith, if a person wasn't a Christian, it is not even intellectually honest. It is totally dishonest. If a person makes that statement, what they just told you is, one, of course, they don't know anything about Christianity because it's very exclusive. I didn't say it. Jesus did. That's that passage in John 14:6 when Jesus said he is the way, the truth, the life. Nobody comes to the Father by him. Okay? But it's not even true. They also told you they didn't know nothing about the world religions on the planet. Just a cursory study of the various religions on the planet, Christianity stands alone completely unique. But even the other ones that even disagree with Christianity, they're totally opposed to each other. All religions on the planet, save Christianity, either teach that you are God, you can become God, or you have to earn your way or work your way to God by doing various religious or good deeds. Christianity alone says there is only one God, you're not God, you'll never be God. And because you can't earn your way to God, and you've sinned against God, and you're not perfect like God, and you never will be, you are cut off from God. But the good news is, God came down, Jesus Christ, and he took the death penalty in your place on the cross. Name one religion on the planet that does that. And so, none is the answer. Okay? So for people to buy into this baloney is not even offensive as a Christian, but it is completely, even if the person is not a Christian, and they're being honest, intellectually honest, you have to realize that something fishy is going on, because there's no way to reconcile all the world's religions with a blanket statement that they're all the same if you're going to be intellectually honest with what they teach, let alone what Christianity stands alone unique. So the question is, well, how in the world are they pulling this off? Well, they're doing it with propaganda. Okay, of course, this is being taught all over the media, all over the educational system and the schools and that nature. But they also use personalities. They also use paganism with crisis, and hopefully I can get to that. And they're also, it's infiltrated into the pulpits. Okay, and I maybe get into that tonight. But let me deal with the personalities. We've got high-profile people, folks, all over the world that are jumping on this one-world religion bandwagon, okay? And it's not just what, quote, people would like to relegate to. Well, that's just the religious culture who's meeting at these world conferences and all those kind of wacky people. No, it's people all over the place from all sectors of society, whether it be politics, whether it be media moguls or personalities or influential people, they're all jumping on the bandwagon. Let me give you a couple examples. We got Ted Turner, of course, of CNN, who, by the way, is paying for most of the costs for the World Peace Summits of religious leaders, by the way. Okay? And here's a direct quote from him. He says, "What disturbed me is that my religious Christian sect was very intolerant. We thought we were the only ones going to heaven." Now wait a second. How can you claim to be a Christian? He just called Jesus Christ a liar. So how can you claim to be a Christian or come from Christianity, and yet the very heart of Christianity, Jesus Christ, in which where we get Christianity comes from, says he is the only way to heaven? How does that logically, intellectually fit? That's one of the most ludicrous statements you could make. But that's what he said. Okay? But that's not all. You've got people in politics all over the place. Let me read to you that quote that you had shared about the former President Bush. Here is the actual interview. Now, folks, you've got to understand, we will show you, you will see on the videos, this actual interview. He was asked this question, "President Bush, let me ask you some questions about faith, which is a tough subject to talk about. Do we all worship the same God, Christian and Muslim?" President Bush said, "I think we do. We have different routes to getting to the Almighty." And the person said, "Do Christians and non-Christians and Muslims go to heaven in your mind?" He said, "President Bush, former, yes, they do. We have different routes of getting there.
And, of course, that is really a heretical statement, and yet, of course, where is the outcry from our Christian leaders? There is one way to God, if you believe what the Bible says, and I happen to believe it. I am the way and the truth and the life. We'll be right back. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, Pastor Billy Crone of the Niagara Frontier Bible Church, and go right ahead, Pastor.
Well, you know, and former President Bush is just the tip of the iceberg of the people on the planet, specifically in the arena, political personalities that are promoting this one world religion idea. And he's just the tip of the iceberg. We have people traipsing around the planet. You got Prince Charles of England. He launched a movement called Respect in order to promote tolerance among the world's religions. Another British person, Tony Blair. Please check this out. Do your own homework. Go to TonyBlairFaithFoundation.org. Check it out for yourself. He has devoted the rest of his life, he says, to bringing the world's religions together to promote peace. In fact, let me read you the first line of his mission statement. The Tony Blair Faith Foundation aims to promote respect and understanding about the world's major religions and show how faith is a powerful force for the good in the modern world. In fact, let me read to you just a piece of his address, speech that he gave to Obama's first national prayer breakfast, Tony Blair speaking. Here's what he said at the national prayer breakfast. Okay, folks, just... not that long ago. He says, quote, "Today religion is under attack from within and from without. From within, it is corroded by extremists who use their faith as a means of excluding the other. I am what I am in opposition to you, and if you do not believe as I believe, you are a lesser being." Now listen to that dripping mockery, okay? Now what he basically said in that statement, okay, by his definition of an extremist who, quote, uses their faith as a means of excluding the other, he just called Jesus Christ an extremist, okay? And he says, "I remember my first spiritual awakening. I was 10 years old." And this is at the National Prayer Breakfast, folks. "That day, my father, at the young age of 40, had suffered a serious stroke. His life hung in the balance, and my mother, to keep some sense of normality in the crisis, sent me to school. My teacher knelt and prayed with me. And now, my father was a militant atheist, and before we prayed, I thought I should confess this, quote, I'm afraid my father doesn't believe in God. And the teacher said, well, that doesn't matter. God believes in him, and he loves him without demanding any love in return." And then he starts getting into the classic, taking a little piece of each religion, of all the wonderful phrases. He says, quote, at the National Prayer Breakfast, he said, "As the Quran states, if anyone saves a person, it will be as if he saved the whole of humanity." He said, "Faith is not discovered in acting according to ritual, but acting according to God's will, and God's will is love." We might also talk, he said, of the Hindu, living beyond the reach of eye and mind, or the words of the Buddha.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Of course, Pastor Billy is simply talking about Tony Blair. Tony Blair addressing the National Prayer Breakfast. Of course, it's put on by the family. And if you don't know anything with the family, remember, this is not put on by the president. Although the president is ordinarily there, it's put on by a group known as the family, a group that you will never hear discussed. But Tony Blair is, of course, giving the usual blather. Of course, you know, there's good in all religions. And, of course, you know, that what we have to do is learn how to mobilize all the various religions, and the ultimate theme is we all have got to, get together and work together. But of course, what they really want is a one world religion. What they really hate, with an intensity that's difficult for people to understand, they hate Christianity, which is why it is unconstitutional for a coach to bow his head in prayer when the members of his football team are praying. Well, before we go on, Pastor Billy, I do want you to give out your web page so people would know how to get in touch with you. We do carry your DVDs on the Final Countdown, on Creation, on the RFID chips, and I think we're just bringing in three new ones we'll be offering as well. But why don't you tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your ministry if they'd like to?
Sure, you can go to our main website is NiagaraFrontierBible.com. That's NiagaraFrontierBible.com, NiagaraFrontierBible.com. Or probably easier would be just Google my name, Billy Crone, C-R-O-N-E, and that'll take you where you need to go.
All right, well, you go ahead and pick up the story there.
Tony Blair, what I left off on, he says, you know, we might also ask the Hindu, living beyond the reach of eye and mind, or the words of the Buddha, after practicing enlightenment, you must go back to practice compassion, or the Sikh scripture, God's bounties are common to all. It is we who have created divisions. He says, the global community, it takes a village, as someone once coined it, is upon us. Into it steps religious faith. But if faith becomes the property of extremists, it will originate discord. But if, by contrast, different faiths can reach out and have knowledge of one another, then instead of being reactionary, religious faith can be a force for progress. He said, the foundation which bears my name and which I began less than a year ago is dedicated to achieving understanding, action, reconciliation between the different faiths for the common good. Bringing the faith communities together fulfills an objective important to all of us, believers and non-believers. I believe restoring religious faith to its rightful place as a guide to our world and its future is of the essence. Now, that, again, it's just the tip of the iceberg. Now, speaking of that being at the first annual National Prayer Breakfast of Obama's administration, here's a quote from President Obama, delivered in June 2006, and a Washington Post columnist called this perhaps, quote, the most important speech on religion and politics in 40 years. Okay? Wow, that sounds pretty impressive. So here's a little slice of that speech that he gave. Listen to this one. He said, quote, given the increasing diversity of America's population, the dangers of sectarianism have never been greater. Whatever we once were, we are no longer just a Christian nation. We are also a Jewish nation, a Muslim nation, a Buddhist nation, a Hindu nation, and a nation of non-believers. And even if we did only have Christians in our midst, if we expelled every non-Christian from the United States of America, whose Christianity would we teach in the schools? Would we go with James Dobson's or Al Sharpton's? Which passages of Scripture should guide our public policy? Should we go with Leviticus, which suggests slavery is okay, or that eating shellfish is an abomination? How about Deuteronomy, which suggests stoning your child if he strays from the faith? Or should we just stick to the Sermon on the Mount, a passage that is so radical that it's doubtful that our own Defense Department would survive its application? That is a direct quote, and that's the status we're in. And so what you're going, you got Al Gore, here's another one, Al Gore, talking about politics. He said, quote, the richness and diversity of our religious tradition throughout history is a spiritual resource long ignored by people of faith, who are often afraid to open their minds to teachings offered outside their own system of belief. But the emergence of a civilization in which knowledge moved freely and almost instantaneously through the world has spurred on a new investigation of the wisdom distilled by all faiths. This pan-religious perspective may prove especially important where our global civilization responsibility for the earth is concerned. So you see it not only with the politics and people at high levels, folks, and it ain't just, quote, those religious folks, okay? It's all over the place. Now, let me give you one guy, and he coined the phrase, she's probably the most dangerous woman on the planet, and that's Oprah Winfrey, okay? And, again, we share with you this actual video clip. Let me read to you the transcript. It's an actual one of her broadcasts. She's promoting a New Age book, okay? And, again, Oprah is like former President Bush, going around trying to give the impression that they're a Christian. And she says this, quote, one of the mistakes human beings make is that there is only one way to live, and that we don't accept that there are diverse ways of being in the world, and instead of millions of ways to be a human being. And then an audience member says, well, then how do you please God? And Oprah just continues on and kind of gives her the hands, like, you know, wait a minute. And Oprah says, and that there are many paths to what you call God. Her path might be something else, and when she gets there, she might call it the light. But her loving and her kindness and her generosity, if it brings her to the same point it brings you, then it doesn't matter whether she called it God along the way or not. And the audience member spoke up and says, you know, I guess the danger in that is that it sounds great at the onset, But if you listen to both sides, and then another audience member interjects and says, there is only one way. And then Oprah comes back and starts to rebuke her and says, there couldn't possibly be just one way. And the audience member says, well, what about Jesus? And then Oprah says, what about Jesus? And the audience says, member says, you say that there isn't only one way, but there is only one way, and that is Jesus. And Oprah says, there couldn't possibly be with the millions of people in the world. And the audience member says, because you say it and you intellectualize it, doesn't mean there's only one way. And she says, if you don't believe it, you are all buying into the lie. You get the series, you will see that actual video clip with your own eyes. And but that's just the tip of the iceberg. If people understand with Oprah Winfrey, you know, earlier this week I made the comment, you know, there's the biblical example of Esther and how God put her in a position of authority during a time of crisis when the people were getting ready to annihilate the Jewish people. And so she was approached by her uncle and said, you need to approach the king. You need to intercede for your people. And he comes back with a classic statement, you know, how do you know that you were not put into this position for a time such as this? And I really believe in a reverse a position that Oprah Winfrey has been given this authority. I believe her following is 50 million. She's got a huge, huge influence around the world. People, 50 million people. And that she's been given such a time as this, not to help God out, but to help the Antichrist kingdom out. Because she's out there teaching this New Age baloney that is the underpinnings of this one world religion. Let me give you just a couple things of what she is teaching. She's teaching, and she taught all last year, a year-long course on the book called A Course of Miracles, okay, which is completely demonic, and we'll get to that in a second. And, for example, let me give you some of the lessons that she taught all of her followers. Lesson number 29 asks you to go through your day affirming that God is in everything I see. Lesson number 61 tells each person to repeat this affirmation, I am the light of the world. Lesson number 70 teaches the student to say and believe, my salvation comes from me. Now, how could you be a Christian and say that you are the light of the world when Jesus said he is the light of the world? How can you be a Christian and say that my salvation comes from me when the Bible says there is no salvation under any name except Jesus Christ? How can you compute that in your mind? How is that intellectually honest? Anyway, but by the end of the year, Oprah and her friends will have completed all the lessons, and those who finish the course, quote, will have a wholly redefined spiritual mindset. And that's the understatement of the year.
And I really think there's an attack on Christianity today. It's in our schools. That's why they put people on the Supreme Court to take God and prayer out of our schools. And that is, of course, why we can't have the Ten Commandments on our schools. We can't have a nativity scene. There's an intense hatred of Christianity. When you understand that, it has nothing to do with the Constitution. The Constitution is very clear in what it says. It has to do with the fact that I believe there is a conspiracy against God, and if you read the Strong's Concordance, over and over again, they'll use the word conspiracy, and the Psalms begins, I think the second Psalm, you'd know better than I would, Pastor, but it talks about, you know, the conspiracy against God. It's not imaginary, it's real. It's about time Christians understood what's really going on, because you're sure not going to learn it from Oprah Winfrey.
Well, exactly. What you're going to get is she's going to use her platform to continue to prepare the minds and the hearts of people to receive the Antichrist kingdom. You know, and it's really interesting, Dr. Matik, you bring up that passage because it's really a very encouraging passage. It explains what people are doing. The Bible says it's going to happen. But it's actually very encouraging for the Christian as times get worse. Psalm 2 says exactly that. Why do the nations conspire? That's your word, conspiracy. You're absolutely right. Exactly what the Bible says. And why do the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth, is what it says. That's a global movement. Take their stand, and the rulers gather together against the Lord and his anointed one. That's the Messiah, Jesus Christ. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. Now listen to this. Here's the encouraging word. You know what God's response is to all that? Verse 4. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. You guys up there going, excuse me? You really think you're going to stop me? Hello, I'm God. Don't you get it? You know? But think about it. It's total common sense that of all religions on the planet that are trying to be annihilated, shut up, hushed up, and persecuted is Christianity. The very term antichrist is antichrist Christianity. It's not anti-Buddha. It's not anti-Muhammad. It's antichrist. And so if you're, which means opposer or in place of. And so the antichrist is the exact polar opposite of Christ, of Christianity. And so, of course, Christianity is going to be attacked because what's coming on the scene is the exact polar opposite. It shouldn't even surprise people. But Oprah, she's out there saying, hey, there is no sin. A slain Christ has no meaning. The journey to the cross should be the last useless journey. And on and on it goes. The name of Jesus Christ, she said, is just but a symbol. It's a symbol that safely is used for the replacement of many names of all the gods to which you pray. God is in everything. The recognition of God is the recognition of yourself, etc., etc. It's absolute blasphemy. And people's hearts are being prepared. And once again, because the church is snoozing at the wheel, and you're not calling, you know, because apparently it's easy to be a Christian today, because all you got to do is just say you're a Christian, and somehow you are one. But that's not reality, and unfortunately, it's leading people down a wrong road. But that's the personalities. It's not just the religious folks. You know, it's not just the personalities. The one thing that maybe I can get into just a little bit tonight is paganism. They're not just using personalities, folks. They're using paganism. You know, because you got to think about it. How are you going to get everybody to get into this global mindset that you need to merge the religions? Well, they're using the same modus of operandus that they're doing for the same global economy that they're forming and the global government that they're forming. Is because you have to create a crisis so you can manage the outcome. But see, you're dealing with things on a global scale, so you have to create a global crisis. You have to create a massive unrest and constant war and constant fear if you're going to snooker people into crying out for the logical response that you want them to cry out for. Help us. We need a global government to control the global crises around the world with the various countries. Okay? Then same thing with the economy that we're seeing happen unfold before our very eyes. How are you going to get these people to converge their economies into one? You have to create a global economic crisis. Okay? Now, it's the exact same principle for religion. How are you going to get all these religions together? Well, you have to create some sort of global crisis and to act as the final nail in the coffin, if you will. If people have second thoughts about doing this, well, hey, we've all got to work together. And that is with this issue with can't we all just get along because we're going to, the planet's going to blow up, global warming, which is a bunch of baloney. As an outset, we've shared this, we've exposed this on our Book of Revelation study. Global warming is a farce. It's not true. It's bunk scientists. Just ask the founder of the Weather Channel. He has at least 19,000, I believe it's probably increased by now, 19,000 scientists are petitioning to prove that global warming is not true, it's not scientific. In fact, they've been trying to get the attention of Al Gore and many other people that are promoting this around the world. They refuse to even address it, to even call them back, anything. So I just, a few weeks ago, came across a deal. The founder of the Weather Channel is suing Al Gore. The only reason why is because he's trying to get them to deal with this topic, to at least respond. This is real. This is not just Christians. These are even non-Christians are saying we are being schnookered, and this is a bunch of baloney. Now, doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Why would they go through all that effort? Well, I'm telling you, it's being used as a tool to converge the religions of the planet. This whole, and let me, under the guise of global warming, look at what's happening. It's called environmental evangelism. Okay? And again, you could see this video with your own eyes. I'm not making this up. It's called, you know, the whole green campaign is being used as a tool to merge, the religions on the planet. Here's an excerpt from one of the videos that we share. It says this, here's the top green religious people according to Live Earth. Reverend Joel Hunter, the senior pastor of Northland Church of Longwood, Florida, he was actually offered the head of the Christian Coalition, but he turned it down because he wanted to focus on issues like poverty and environmental protection. Then there's Norman Hobble. He's a theology professor out of Australia who edited something called the Earth Bible. Then, of course, there's Pope Benedict XVI who said, quote, the people of faith must listen to the voice of the earth or risk destroying its very existence. There's the Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, head of the Anglican Church. There's the Buddhist leader, Dalai Lama. And they say, but one thing that you should add to the list is the National Evangelical Association, because 2 years ago it issued a letter to 50,000 members of its churches, which means that 30 million evangelicals affirm, quote, we affirm that God-given dominion is a sacred responsibility and that the government has an obligation to protect its citizens from the effect of environmental degradation. And they have the What Would Jesus Drive website. I kid you not, check that one out. And in case apparently you're not very good at ordering your worship services, here's some suggestions they actually give you for a so-called Christian worship service. Here's a prayer that you could say if in case you can't think of anything. We are thankful for all the gifts of life you provide, including the gift of mobility. For all of us who can walk unhindered, we give thanks and we pray your blessing on those who are hindered. For all of our various modes of transportation, and for all those efforts to make our transportation choices less harmful in terms of pollution and environmental degradation, we give thanks and pray for your blessing. Bless now these gifts we bring, that they will help us to do your work in the world and further establish your lordship in our lives. Amen.
Amen. Well, we're just about out of time. Our guest this evening has been Pastor Billy Crone. Of course, this film series is called The Final Countdown, Part 1, Part 2. There are 5 DVDs in each one. Fascinating way to renew your faith and to understand what's going on. Well, Pastor, you got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
You know, one thing that I just kind of give a little teaser, and we shared this actual video clip on our Revelation study, and...
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look, and I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh. Healthy. Easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-
Steve.
Good night. God bless.
God bless.
All right, fine. Well, I hope you've enjoyed our conversations. We're actually going to put these conversations into a tape set, but we do have the DVD, and the advantage to the DVD is the fact that you can actually see the video clips, and Pastor Belli's done a wonderful job of putting these together. You'll actually see the DVDs of everything we've been talking about, and everything it's a sermon format, but then of course he flashes on the screen all the biblical quotations, all the biblical verses that help to understand what's going on. And then, of course, combined with the video clips, we think it's really great. And we put out a lot of them that are called The Final Countdown. You get part one, 5 DVDs, part two, 5 DVDs, and get them all together. And this is what I ordinarily would do probably tonight when we finish our programs. We'll go up to our little video room, and we'll sit and we'll watch Pastor Belli for a half an hour or so. And, of course, we have lots of other things. We carry his 10 DVD set on creation. We carry his 4 DVD set on RFID identification. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, the law in America today is that every farm animal has to have an RFID or other form of identification on it. Every little chicken, every little chicklet, every goose. What madness is that? Oh, well, the government has to know. After all, there might be some sort of a spread of a disease, and the government's got to know where these animals are to protect you. No, ladies and gentlemen, they want to know where everything is because they want everything identified. Every object that is sold, every object that moves, every animal that's domesticated, and soon every individual is going to have some sort of identification. They're already putting this into our driver's licenses, the RFID. They're already putting it into our passports. Everything is to be identified. Give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We hope that you will go ahead and get the Final Countdown. You'll find it very, very informative, and it will help you to explain to other people what's really going on, why they're creating this worldwide financial crisis. Believe me, it is created, and none of the things they're doing are designed to help. It's to give you impression they're trying to help. So with Chris, Final Countdown, let me suggest my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and or the DVD by that title, my talk on the Forbidden Secret and the syllabus that goes with that, our talk on the planned police state and the syllabus that goes with that. And we don't like to think about a police state in America, but of course the advantage of the syllabus is you'll find all the references where you can look it up and find it really is true. They really have refurbished the Japanese concentration camps from the Second World War in preparation. Of course, they say we refurbished them because we wanted people just to think how terrible it was that we actually put American citizens in concentration camps. And then they turned around and appropriated $385 million for Kellogg, Brown, and Root, division of Dick Cheney's Halliburton Corporation, to build new concentration camps in America. They passed a new legislation to actually build the detention camps on American Army bases. This is fairly recent. I think that's House Resolution 645, something like that, if you want to get the 645, 625. You need to understand this is not imaginary. It's all very real. So if you want to get the exact information, you can always get in touch with us. We hope you'll go to our webpage at radioliberty.com. Radioliberty.com, you'll listen to our programs. You can listen to our live programs 4 hours a day, our satellite feed 9 hours a day. You won't get much accomplished, but you'll sure learn a lot. And of course, Joyce Riley's up there along with Pastor Butch Paw and, of course, Reverend Chris Meyer. And then, of course, you can watch our DVDs. Go to the section on other DVDs. Read the newsletters, especially November and December of 2008 and January of 2009, and understand nothing as it appears to be. We'll be right back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion and delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and, well, for the next hour, they're going to be the views of John Williams of Shadow Statistics. He is actually an economist, and he's put together really the statistics that you're not going to get from the controlled media. And basically, you will be getting official government statistics on unemployment, on the rate of inflation, on the M3 is the measurement of how much money the government is actually creating. Only they've stopped putting it out because it's too expensive to tell the American people what we're doing with the money supply. And if you believe that, when they can put out, I think they put out pretty close to $10 trillion here this last, since January of 2008, what's that, about 14 months, put out about $10 trillion at given length, to address the economic crisis. But we just can't come up with those statistics on M3. Well, Mr. Williams hopefully will be able to get that for us. It's called the shadowstats.com. Shadowstats.com. Mr. Williams, thank you so very much for being with us tonight.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, we certainly are living in, I think, of course, the most challenging times of my lifetime, and that's, I remember the second, I can remember the Great Depression back there in the 1930s. I was pretty young at the time, but I can still remember them, and of course, I can remember my dad was making $100 a month, and that was considered a good salary. Didn't live like kings, but we always had food on the table and always had something to offer the other people who came to the door asking for food. But right now, of course, we seem to be on the brink of something that really most people have no concept of, although we haven't got to the point of soup lines or tent cities yet, at least on a large scale, because, of course, we have the welfare system here and we have the unemployment insurance, but what happens when that unemployment insurance runs out? And, well, we've got the food stamps, but what happens when the government runs out of money, or is that possible? John, why don't you give us your impression of what's really going on today and what's happening to not only our economy, but to the economy of the world?
Well, let me start with our economy, because our economy in many ways is item that's going to drive the global economy, or does drive the global economy. Right now we're in a very deep recession, deepest by many measures since the end of World War II, which pretty much takes you back to the Great Depression. There was a very sharp contraction in the economic activity at the end of the Second World War, as war production was shut down. And in many ways, that was almost as steep and as fast as how the Great Depression hit. But most people don't look at that as a real recession. I mean, that's the end of a war is not a normal economic cycle. And we had the troops coming home, and of course, you had the rebuilding of an economy and such that followed. But the Second World War is really what pulled us out of the Great Depression. It wasn't Franklin Roosevelt's policies per se, but what happened back in the Roosevelt era actually has in many ways resulted in the problems that we're seeing today. We have a let's go back in time. What Roosevelt had at the time.
Well, I'm going to ask you to hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here with John Williams. All right, John, go right ahead.
As the Great Depression broke, and it really started a little bit before the stock market crash in 29. A lot of it was due to lagged effects of the end of World War One and the finishing of the building of the Panama Canal brought industry, industrial activity down fairly sharply. You'd had a period of time where you'd had a lot of debt expansion, leveraging of debt, much as we had today. And you had a collapse in the financial markets, which exacerbated a downturn that was, at that time, probably about as bad as we have now. This is before you really get really bad in the depths of the Great Depression, 1933 or such. But it was bad enough to cost a lot of people their jobs, enough to threaten the stability of the banking system. And as you got into the early 30s, you saw an increase in the face of bank failures. 1933, you had such a collapse that, that there even was a bank holiday. The problem was that as the banking system collapsed, people lost the money they had on deposit with the banks. And with that, you had a collapse in the money supply. Because the money supply reflects basically money that's in various accounts in a deposit form. As the money supply collapsed, you ended up seeing a further deepening of the downturn in the economy, along with a very sharp decline in prices, a deflation. And it is that really had Mr. Bernanke scared a year or so ago, as we started to see some of the unusual actions that came out of our Fed. I'll come back to that. But Franklin Roosevelt was in a circumstance where, in order to stimulate the economy, he somehow had to expand government spending to get the money supply to grow, which he couldn't do under the gold standard of the time. The gold standard, where the dollar was backed by gold, imposed a discipline on the money supply. And by abandoning the gold standard, he was able to get into a position where he could...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. And, of course, John has just been talking about the Great Depression, and certainly at that time we were on the gold standard, and of course, you couldn't just indiscriminately increase the amount of money, because you had the gold standard kept you from just printing money indiscriminately. And so what happened at that time?
Well, what happened was that I'll contend that Mr. Roosevelt, when he took us off the gold standard, put us on what I'll call the debt standard. And U.S. Presidential administrations ever since have been building upon that up to the present time. If you go back to when the market crashed in 1987 and Mr. Greenspan came in as the new Fed chairman, he came in just before the crash. He knew that there was a real problem with the economy, one that could not, one that would not normally correct itself quickly, that there was a recession that was building up, a financial collapse that was building up, and he was able to buy time by encouraging people to take on that further, to build leverage upon leverage effectively, setting up the circumstance which we're now seeing collapse, and it's a collapse of the debt structure that is the leverage upon leverage that's been set up over the last couple of decades that is really making the current situation so bad.
And what you're really basically talking about, they create this massive amount of credit with absolutely nothing behind it, a house of cards built upon a foundation of sand, and of course if it starts to crumble, it just keeps right on crumbling because there's nothing to stop it. Would that be a fair appraisal?
It is. And effectively what has happened is we've reached we've reached the limits of the debt standard that Roosevelt created, but there's nothing beyond that. We already have a currency that's no longer backed by gold. It's backed by nothing but the full faith and credit of the federal government, which at this point, unfortunately, is not worth too much. What happened? reason Greenspan did what he did, and I'm sorry to be dragging the history into this so much, but it helps to explain why we are where we are and where we're going to go.
You go right ahead, because I think the history is so important. If you don't know where you've been, you certainly don't know where you are today. So let's start with where we've been.
If you go back to the 1970s, early 70s, the second part of what Roosevelt started with the abandonment of gold was completed by Richard Nixon. Roosevelt had abandoned gold as a standard for the backing of the dollar in domestic transactions. You could no longer take the dollars you had and cash them in for gold at the Treasury. But the gold standard was still used internationally for squaring accounts between countries, so that if we were running a trade deficit with France, and France wanted gold to offset the difference, gold would be transferred to France. And in fact, it was something along those lines back in 1971 that was getting so bad that Richard Nixon closed what they called the gold window and basically completely removed gold from the monetary system. At that point in time, we were seeing money supply growth around 16%. It was the highest in modern history in terms of the broadest measure of the money supply.
Now, of course, weren't they actually, of course, expanding it that rapidly because we were involved in a war in Vietnam?
That was indeed a major factor.
And so it was basically they were having to pay for the war, expanding the money because they were borrowing.
At the war, we also had a problem with oil.
Right.
And at that level, we were beginning to see very high inflation. At the time that Nixon closed the gold window in August of 71, he also imposed wage and price controls. As the U.S. trade deficit continued to grow, and in many ways this was a product of bad trade policy that's gotten a lot worse over time, what happened was that the U.S. economy lost high-paying jobs to foreign competitors, to manufacturing bases offshore. The result is that if you look at, and this is using the government's numbers, if you look at the average weekly earnings for an individual as they were back in the early 70s versus today, adjusted for the government's inflation number, you're about 15% below where you were back in the 1970s. That means that the average family indeed has not been able to keep up with inflation, and the effect has been, we're back in the early 70s, you more commonly had one person working, such as the husband with the wife staying at home with the kids. Today it's much more common to have two, maybe even three people in a household working in order to make ends meet. And the government's numbers, and again, this is using government surveys and the government's estimates of inflation, show that the average household still is not staying ahead of inflation. In fact, the latest poverty report, which is where they publish some of these numbers, show that the average household income, adjusted for inflation, has not regained the level that was seen at its peak before the last recession. I'm talking the 2000 recession. So that's 2001 recession. That still hasn't been regained. And therein is the problem, because in order to have sustained economic growth, you have to have sustained growth or sustainable growth in income. If income net of inflation is not gaining, there's no way that a consumption can gain net of inflation, which is the way the GDP is measured, unless you have some kind of a temporary distortion such as expansion of debt or liquidation of savings. We've seen both of those, and it's the expansion of debt that Mr. Greenspan was pushing in the late 80s up until the time that he left the chair of the Federal Reserve.
In other words, everybody would go out and borrow money, and then you'd have more money to spend, and you'd feel that you were rich, and look at all these things, and we'll worry about paying for our debt later on, but take on more and more and more debt. And not only the individuals did this, but the corporations did that, and that's why so many corporations, I believe, are getting into trouble today, is because they have just too much debt. That's fine as long as the economy is growing, but it begins to contract, and then, of course, why there's no way to pay your debt, and that you end up in bankruptcy court. But go right ahead.
Well, that's exactly what's happening, and it goes one step further, and that is the both the federal and state governments, to the extent the states were able to borrow, have done the same thing, and therein lies the greater problem in terms of what lies ahead, because as this recession started, much as with the recession that started before the stock crash in 29, the downturn here had a number of economic factors hitting it, including the structural problems tied to the trade deficit. It hit the housing area, and that in turn triggered defaults in some of these more exotic securities that were designed on these lower quality mortgages, and in turn it snowballed and has led to basically a downward spiral with the debt, bringing with it a lot of the growth and activity that's been seen build up over the last couple of decades. And that's what had Mr. Bernanke scared, because what he was saying, as the banking system began to falter, was some fear that there might be a repeat of the 1930s, where the banks would go out of business, or there'd be runs on the banks. And if you had runs on the banks, even with deposit insurance as it exists today, or at least as it did before the crisis broke, not 100%. In theory, the large banks were too big to fail, and you know, even though there's a $100,000 limit in terms of FDIC insurance on certain accounts, that for the big banks, they'd likely be covered by federal guarantees. And that was sort of an assumption in the marketplace. But Mr. Bernanke was in a circumstance that he somehow had to avoid a collapse of the banking system, or at least a collapse of the depository functioning of the banking system, because if it did collapse, you'd also have a following collapse of the money supply, and with that you'd have a deflationary Great Depression, much as you had in the 1930s. It would have had a lot of differences, but in terms of the two basics, in terms of economic activity collapsing and what happened to inflation, also collapsing, it would have been fairly close.
But of course, aren't we really faced with two possibilities? Either we go into a depression, or we go into inflation, and maybe even both inflation. But what is the worst thing that could happen to our country? Deflation or a runaway inflation? And do we have any alternatives?
Well, I don't know that I can tell you that one's really a lot worse than the other. But
hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, John, you go right ahead. That doesn't sound like we've got very good options.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four tape or a four CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets that will protect your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
Did you know that there's an increasing amount of scientific data which says that fluoride in drinking water is dangerous? Are you aware that your drinking water may in fact contain many unhealthy substances, even things which can cause sickness or disease? If you'd like information on how to remove these contaminants, find out about the Berkey water filter. You can call 800-544-8927 for complete information. There is a way to return to having pure, safe drinking water. The Berkey water filter. Call 800-544-8927 for information about a product that could protect you and your family from waterborne disease. The number to call is 800-544-8927. Call today.
I know what it's like to lay awake at night and worry about mounting credit card debt. That nagging feeling in the pit of your stomach that just won't go away. And the phone calls from collectors. Forget about it. Then I called Help You Out of Debt. Their professional staff of debt mediators were able to help me get my upside down finances back on track and help stop the phone call. My Help You Out of Debt settlement specialist understood exactly what I was going through. My specialist was able to get creditors off my back, negotiate huge reductions on most of my balances, and help me fight back against the credit card companies. Help You Out of Debt specialists are experts in debt mediation and settlement. They are on your side. They've helped thousands of people just like me and can help you too. Call now and get a free debt review. If you're $10,000 or more in credit card or unsecured debt and ready to start fighting back, call 866-374-3101 and get your free debt review. That's 866-374-3101 or on the web at helpyououtofdebt.com. 866-374-3101.
That's fair in terms of what the Fed was targeting.
All right. Now, basically, how much was it before September of last year? What was the
In terms of the monetary base, which is in theory what they control the money supply with, it was only the year over year growth was only around 2%.
All right. Fine.
However, the broad money supply M3 was up in the it was over 10%.
All right, well, then
year over year at that point in time.
What's happened since then?
Well, what's happened since then, where the monetary base had been, say, the growth had been around 2%, within a couple of months, that was up to over 100% year over year. And we began to see some growth in the broad money supply. M3 is up to 12%. In January, looks like maybe the growth rate's going to slow a little bit in February because of the current problems, or what's becoming intensified problems in the banking system at the moment. But the Fed will be able to get that money supply, the broad money supply growth, to increase quite rapidly. It's not going to be up 100%, but I think you'll see it up over 20% in the next 6 months and growing very rapidly after that. Well above what we saw at the last peak back during the Nixon era.
Now, some people have said that they've increased the monetary base threefold. You say we've just really...
They've increased it threefold, 100% year-over-year growth.
All right.
I mean, it's... That actually is...
Is that an exaggeration?
That's a doubling of the monetary base, but in terms of reserves, I mean the monetary base consists of about $800 billion in cash, and back in September it was about $40-50 billion in reserves. And today it's about $800 billion in cash, and about $800 billion. In reserves. So,
okay,
in terms of the monetary base,
that's doubled. Right. Okay.
But
fine.
If you look at the bank reserves, you're up 20-fold.
All right. The bank reserves are up 20-fold.
Up 20-fold since September. Now that's absolutely unprecedented. The thing is, the banks aren't lending the money into the system, which they need to do in order for it to pass on into the broader measures. And
so what you're saying is
wants to create some inflation here. The best opportunity it has beyond what it's already been doing is as this new stimulus package kicks in and the Treasury starts to borrow the money to support it, would be for the Fed to come in and just buy the debt directly and effectively monetize the debt. I think you're going to see that. However they work it, you will see that money supply growth continue to grow very rapidly. The cost here again is inflation. The risk, and the ultimate risk, is a hyperinflation. But that was in place. The risk for that was in place before the current crisis broke. If you look at the government's financial statements and what's happened in the last 6 years or so is that Uncle Sam is had to report its finances the same way that a corporation would, using generally accepted accounting principles, using accrual accounting, not working on the cash basis, which is what they normally work their numbers on, and not ignoring Social Security as they have in the past, so Social Security and Medicare. If you look at those financial statements put out by the U.S. Treasury, what you'll find is that we're in 2007, you hit an official deficit of about $450 billion. That was around $5.1 trillion if you looked at it the way a corporation would look at its exposures.
In other words, it wasn't $450 billion, it was really over $5 trillion, and they simply were not telling the American people. Would that be a fair statement?
Well, they're not making a big deal about it, but it is. They are now actually publishing the numbers.
Right. The thing is that this is why we need people such as yourself on our program, so that people will actually understand. I mean, what do you do with a $5 trillion deficit in 1 year? We'll be back.
The problem
in just a
is there's nothing that you can do. You
hold that thought. We'll be right there.
But it is a surplus. The other end of it is you have to slash Social Security, Medicare, which you don't think is politically feasible. I think slash.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John is just saying that we're talking about a deficit of $5 trillion per year. This was the last year, not the $450 billion we were told about. And as he points out, you know, the only thing you could do would be to slash Medicare and Social Security, and that isn't feasible because it wouldn't be popular. you know, with the population, you know, to take anything away from people. I mean, everybody's, you know, in favor of government, cutting government spending, unless, of course, it affects them. So you go right ahead with the story there, please.
Well, we now have an administration that is a new administration. We've got it for 4+ years. And the move here very quickly is toward increasing the government spending, the government obligations, although they can't fund it any better than the Bush administration was able to fund its expansion of the government's obligations. What we have right now, as things stood at the end of September of 2008, the end of the last fiscal year for the government, the federal government had total obligations and net present value and the unfunded liabilities for Social Security, Medicare, and all its other debt, $65 trillion. That'll be well over $70 trillion this year. And putting that in perspective, it's more than four times the level of the U.S. GDP. It's larger than the global GDP. There's no way the government can ever pay that. People in Washington knew that when they established the obligations, and they know that today, even though they're pushing forth new programs to try and appease people politically. The problem is the government just cannot afford to pay it. And there are two things that will happen. Either the government will effectively declare bankruptcy and default on its debt, which governments generally do not do, or they're going to do what most governments who've gotten themselves into similar circumstances do, and that is that they rev up the printing press and they pay off their obligations with a debased currency, devalued dollar because of inflation.
But in the process, they of course destroy the financial stability of the people, and you impoverish the people. I mean, there's no crueler thing that you can do other than to promote inflation, realizing that it destroys everything that the vast majority of people invested their whole life to accumulate. There's no better way to destroy a nation, said Alan Greenspan, than to debase the currency and not one person a million. We'll know what's going on. We'll be right back here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John is just simply saying that two things government can do. One of them, of course, is to certainly cut back dramatically on services, but why they wouldn't do that. The other thing that people, governments traditionally do when they get into the same situation we are today, because it's happened so many times down throughout history, is they simply massively expand the money supply and they pay off their obligations with worthless money, money that's devalued. In the process, they destroy the financial stability of the nation. So we've got the two choices. Which way are we going? Well, before we go on, John, would you like to get your website out and any information you'd like to get to our listeners?
I'd be happy to, thanks. The website is shadowstats.com, S-H-A-D-O-W-S-T-A-T-S, shadowstats.com. The newsletter is called Shadow Government Statistics. We have quite a bit available on the website for the general public, and if anyone's interested in following the current outlook, we're also happy to take on the new subscribers. But you'll find on the homepage, right-hand column, there's a special report on hyperinflation that details quite a bit that I'm looking at. It actually was written just about a year ago, but the general outlook in it has not changed. The fundamentals that were in place then are in place now. If anything, the circumstance has gotten a little worse, and where I've been estimating that the hyperinflation could hit anywhere between 2010 and 2018, I've narrowed that range from to the end of this year, 2009, till 2014, we're closing in on it. We also estimate alternate measures of the consumer price index, which is the rate of inflation, economic growth, unemployment, more along the lines of what people would consider to be common experience. The problem I found over the years is that the average person has found increasingly that what the government reports seems to vary more and more with what they experience, that the economy is actually weaker than reported and inflation higher than reported. The reason for this divergence, more than anything else, has been changes in reporting methodologies over the years that have tended to put some upside biases into the economic reporting and downside biases into inflation. So I do publish some estimates there. To give you an idea as to what it would be if you were looking at it the way the numbers used to be calculated in earlier periods before the politics and this got too far out of whack. And again, that's shadowstats.com.
Well, if we do get into hyperinflation, I mean, how bad is it going to be? I mean, would it be, you know, 100%, 200%, 1,000%, what?
With the hyperinflation I'm looking at is like the it was seen in the Weimar Republic in Germany after World War One. there are a number of definitions out there as to what constitutes hyperinflation. I use a very crude but simple definition, and that is when you look at the largest note of currency in circulation before the inflation, in this case a $100 bill, when that becomes worth more as functional toilet paper than as currency, you have a hyperinflation. I mean, the currency absolutely becomes worthless. And if you look at the what happened in Germany, just to give you a sense of how unusual this can be, if you were to go into a restaurant to have lunch, you would negotiate and pay for the price of your lunch before you sat down to eat, because by the time you got up, the price would have gone up. You could go in and have a nice dinner and a very expensive bottle of wine, and the next morning that empty bottle of wine was worth more scrap glass than it was worth the night before, filled with very very high quality wine.
But how can an economy work under those circumstances? How can people buy and sell? How do they accumulate that amount of money so that the employers can?
It's very difficult, particularly in an electronic age. But what happens is that normal commerce tends to break down, and you end up in something like a barter system. And there are a couple of things that people can look at as stores of wealth, and I'll contend that this is the type of environment where investors generally need to look to preserve their assets and their wealth and not worry too much about making short-term gains in stocks or bonds. The stores of wealth that I look at are very traditional. And you see them in the headlines all the time. One is physical gold. And that is tended to act as a store of wealth and maintain its value over literally millennia. The other is, if possible, to maybe hold some assets outside the U.S. dollar. You don't need to put all your assets in the gold or outside the U.S. dollar, but just to have enough of a core there to help you ride out a real bad storm. And once you're comfortable there, and I'm not an investment advisor, I'm just an economist. I'm trying to give people a sense of, where the fundamentals are headed here, and most people can figure out what to do with something like that. But if you were headed into a barter type economy or a situation where normal commerce might cease, it would make some sense to have a store of goods that you, let's say, might be consuming over the next 6 months or so, just as you would prepare for an earthquake. You might not have a six-month supply of canned goods, but you'd certainly have enough to carry for a while. And, it's a the type of circumstance where you see disruption, perhaps, to normal supply chains. Having goods to barter. some people, for example, might drink scotch. I'm not advocating that people drink scotch, but if you have something that you consume that is a relatively good-priced small package, like a bottle of scotch, stock up on something that you would otherwise consume. If I'm completely wrong, you still have an inventory there that you can consume. Otherwise, you trade it off for other goods and services. It's just a matter of being prepared for what might happen here.
Well, one of the things you mentioned earlier was the fact that the bank reserves had increased 20%. Where did all this money come from? Is this the money that the banks would ordinarily be lending out that they're afraid to lend out? Is some of this the TARP funds that were given to the major banks? Where did all this money come from? Why are the bank reserves so high, and how did they increase so rapidly in such a short period of time?
It was that was directly created by the Federal Reserve, and the banks have been afraid to lend it out. They've been putting it with the Fed, basically to earn some interest, which they can do.
All right, you're then speaking about the fact that for the first time the Fed is actually began to pay interest on the reserves then that are deposited with the Fed. Is this what you're referring to?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear what you said.
Well, my understanding was that the Fed in the past has not paid interest. They've only recently started paying interest on the reserves that are deposited with them. So when you're talking about the 20% increase in bank reserves, you're really talking about the bank reserves that are deposited with the Fed. Is that what you're speaking
of? Yeah, that's right. That's due to the, as part of the solution to the crisis, the Fed had enacted it's something that had been pending. I think they just advanced it in time, whereby they could pay interest on the reserves that the banks deposited with them. It's a 20-fold increase, not a 20% increase.
I'm sorry, 20% increase. But, of course, the thing is, the logical thing would be, rather than, of course, encourage the people to deposit money with the Fed, would be to get the banks to stop depositing money with the Fed and start lending those funds out. And it almost as if the Fed was actually soaking up the reserves there, so there would be no money for the banks to lend.
You're raising a good point, and the rationale behind the paying interest was to effectively put a floor under the Fed funds rate so that they could put as much money as they wanted into the system, but by setting whatever interest rate they did in paying the money on the reserves, that would effectively act as a floor under the Fed funds rate so they wouldn't drop to zero. And now the Fed has moved the Federal Reserve targeted federal funds rate to zero to a quarter of a percentage point, effectively zero. So, that is something that is you have to wonder about as to what was really intended there.
Well, no, let's look at a couple of things. What is the M3 doing at the present time? This is would M3 be pretty close to the money base?
M3 is the broadest measure. The money base, only thing that's in the money base, that's in the money supply numbers, is the currency. That's in M1.
All right, fine.
So you start at M1, that's the lowest traditional measure, and the smallest traditional measure. It's the base. It's currency in circulation, basically, and checking accounts. And on top of M1, then you add on top of that savings accounts and small time deposits, money market mutual funds, and that gives you M2. And then on top of M2, you add the large accounts, the large time deposits, more than $100,000 for deposit institutional money funds. And then they have smaller categories tied to Eurodollar deposits and bank repos, which together in terms of scope, and I'm doing this from very rough memory, but M1 would be roughly 1.5 trillion today, 1.5, 1.6. M2 is around 7.8 trillion, and M3 would be around 14 trillion. So M3 is the broadest measure, and it's usually the broadest measure that gives you the best indication of where inflation's heading.
Right, and it's been my feeling they're not publishing M3 because they really don't want people to realize that they are rapidly increasing the amount of money and credit out there. Would that be a fair statement?
That would be my presumption. There's when they ceased publication of M3, the reasons they gave were that, number one, it was not meaningful, and number two, it's too expensive to continue tracking. But they still publish most of the components, and in fact, I heard some comments recently that they're still at least internally tracking it, so there's no reason they couldn't publish it.
Well, I think that we hear about openness in government, but I really don't believe they believe in openness. I don't think they want the American people to really understand what is happening or what the future holds. Now, what about the rate of inflation? What about the rate of unemployment? We get these statistics from the government. Are they accurate? They talk now about the inflation.
Well, it's a matter of how you define it, and I guess within their definitions that they're accurate, but the definitions have changed over time. The CPI, which is the most popularly followed measure of inflation, right now on a year-over-year basis is effectively zero. It's slightly on the plus side of zero, but it's effectively zero. And that's the reason it's so low is because you've had a sharp decline in oil and gasoline prices in the last 6 months. But that has started to reverse. And if you looked at the CPI today the way it used to be, before it was redefined, and I say it's redefined, there have been a number of changes made in the last 15, 20 years, where the concentration on the changes made to the CPI were to make it something akin to a substitution-based index, where if, let's say, the price of steak, at least this is the way Alan Greenspan argued it when he was first making the claim that the way the CPI was at the time overstated inflation, that if the price of steak goes up, people can start buying hamburger, and if you don't count the hamburger instead of the steak, then you're overstating inflation. That's not so. The concept behind inflation up through the early 90s had been as a measure of the cost of maintaining a constant standard of living. And that's what you look to use the CPI measure for. If you're looking to adjust your salary, you want your salary to go up at least by what would be needed so that you can maintain the same type of lifestyle that you had the year before. But the Greenspan argument was that you could replace steak with hamburger, and effectively in the process that the CPI moved more towards becoming a measure of the cost of a declining standard of living, which really is of no value to anyone other than the people in the government who were trying to lower the CPI artificially. Going back to 1990, was calculated then. If you were using that today, the CPI would be about 3% higher, so that means that the CPI would be running about 3% instead of zero. And if you go back to the way it was calculated in 1980, you'd be looking somewhere in the 7 to 8% range higher than today, so you'd be looking at inflation 7 to 8% instead of zero.
Well, now, what about the unemployment rate? What's the unemployment doing? I mean, we told it 7.8% last.
Well, that's the official number. The government publishes a number of estimates. Its broadest measure is right now about close to 14%.
Mm-hmm.
And if you add in some changes that were made back in 1994, or reverse some changes that were made in 1994 that tended to reduce the broadest measure of unemployment, you're probably approaching something close to 18% right now.
18%. That, of course, a lot of people, of course, who've had to take much lower paying jobs, working part time, and the long term unemployed who've just sort of given up hope.
Yep.
Americans who've given up hope. Our guest this evening, John Williams, is webpage shadowstats.com. Well, John, we've got 3 minutes.
Heart disease is on the rise. Clogged arteries, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol levels may not be fully detected by you, but the symptoms are there. Loss of energy, blood sugar spikes and drops, poor circulation, and irregular heartbeat are just a few of these that can alert you that something is wrong. Hear how Heart and Body Extract is making a difference in thousands of people's lives across America.
My blood pressure has normalized. My diabetes has totally improved.
Everyone is telling me now how much healthier I look. And I'm telling everyone how much healthier I feel. I recommend Heart and Body Extract to everyone.
Anybody over 40 in the North American continent should be using this product as a preventative to keep their cardiovascular system healthy.
Order your 2-month supply today by calling 866-295-5305. That's 866-295-5305. Or order online, hbextract.com. Heart and Body Extract, 866-295-5305 or hbextract.com.
With food prices soaring to all-time highs, as the dollar continues to fall in value, what can you and your family do to guarantee that fresh, nutritious vegetables will make it to your dinner table? Garden in a Can. Garden in a Can is your source for premium, long-term storable seeds. Garden in a Can is ready when you are. Plant them now or store them for when you really need them. There are 16 large, hermetically sealed, non-hybrid, open-pollinated packets of seeds, along with detailed planting instructions sealed in a can for ultimate long-term protection. Garden in a Can. It's that simple. Fresh, healthy, easy. Only $69.95 for over a half acre of safe, fresh vegetables. Ready when you are. Stop procrastinating and start preparing with Garden in a Can. For more details, visit GardenInACan.com today. That's GardenInACan.com or call 866-598-7396, 866-598-7396.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Cold, but it's certainly not as high as it was some time ago. Certainly last year, the middle of last year, things were going up very rapidly as the price of oil was going up. But right now, although food is going up some, many things are not going up as rapidly. But we're in a very, very volatile situation. You have to know what's going on. And so we hope you'll be listening on a regular basis as we have Bob Chapman on every Monday afternoon and twice a week on twice a month on the weekend. We'll have Melody Cedarstrom and Ron Brown on with us. And from time to time, we'll have other speakers. If you haven't heard my talk on the financial tsunami, it's a talk we gave about 3 years ago, but nothing has changed, and we recommend it. There's a syllabus that goes with the talk on the financial tsunami. There are two little pamphlets, they're inexpensive. One is called The History of Money, Which You Should Know, and the other is called The Financial Meltdown, and those are available, all of them, by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. We have a brand new book that was written back in 1935, and it was called The Money Creators, written by Gertrude Coogan, who was actually recruited by a group of financiers to write a book, a definitive book on money and its creation. And so she wrote the book, and I'm not sure whether it was this book or another book, but when it was all finished and she gave it to these men who paid her a good deal of money, and she said, "When will the book created be published?" And they said, "Never. This book will never be published." So the information she obviously had was worth a great deal of money, so that it could never be circulated to the American people. The last thing they want is for the American people to understand the fraudulent nature of what's going on today. That's why I suggest you go to my website, RadioLiberty.com, read my November, December, and January newsletters, and of course the other newsletters will be coming along. They'll explain to you that there's this little group of people who run our country. It's a cabal, and of course they have an objective. They want to destroy this nation. And they want to destroy the economy of the world and move us into a one-world government. If you doubt that is the plan, why, one of the major architects of everything going on is Henry Kissinger, and you can read his January 12, 2009 article in the International Herald Tribune, International Herald, I guess. It's the International Herald Tribune. And basically, of course, that's January 12th, 2009, International Herald Tribune, titled A Chance for a New World Order. And that's what it's all about. They're going to destroy everything. And as he says, you've got two choices. It's either the new international order or chaos. The new international order of chaos. You can pull the article down off the internet if you can't get it. Why, we'll be glad to provide it for you. You need to get this information. You need to get the information out. You need to let people know they created this, and they did it, in my estimation, intentionally. Certainly, Mr. Williams admitted tonight that it really doesn't make sense that the Federal Reserve has actually increased its reserves 20-fold, not 20%, but 20-fold. What have they done? They've started paying interest on the reserves. They've dried up the reserves. Why? Because they don't want lending, because they want this whole house of cards to come tumbling down. It's a long-range plan. That's why you need to read my newsletters. You need to let people understand that they're doing it on purpose. They're going to destroy our economy. They're going to destroy your savings. Learn what's going on and help us to get the word out. Get people to listen to our programs. But read my November and December 2008 newsletters. You should be subscribing. If you don't, shame on you. But you could read them for nothing up on the internet, and then our January newsletters posted there. Get the information.